Welcome to the Heathrow results presentation, and I should welcome all of you who are dialing in today. Thank you for joining us for our 2019 full year results. We are here in the fantastic Deutsche Bank building with a wonderful view out over the city, so I'm just trying to make you jealous if you are dialing in. I'm John Holland-Kaye, I'm the Chief Executive at Heathrow, and with me are Javier Echave, our Chief Financial Officer, and Sally Ding, our amazing Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. So they will deal with any difficult questions you might have. I know all the answers to the technical questions. I just like to let them show off what they can do. Today we're going to present the highlights from 2019, and the materials that we're presenting are to be read in conjunction with our annual report and accounts, which is the first time we have really stepped up to a PLC quality of reporting. And we're going for quite a high level of disclosure. And I have to say that because there are lots of disclaimers in there that I want to draw your attention to. Before we get on to 2019, I'd just like to reflect a little bit on page four about where we have come from. I've been with the company for almost 11 years. And when I joined the company, we were a business that had just been coming through the global financial crisis. We just opened Terminal 5, but the rest of the airport was in a pretty sorry state. And shortly after I joined, there was a report in the paper saying that Heathrow had been voted by passengers one of the worst 10 airports in the world. And lots of people would ask me, well, why on earth are you joining a company that is such a miserable place? And at that time, people thought we were about to go bust as well. And I thought, well, what a fantastic opportunity. Things can only get better. And if I'm lucky, I'll be able to be carried along on that wave of improvement, which is exactly what has happened because 5 years later, I became chief executive. So that is one of my few plans that actually worked. But it was a very different place, and it's remarkable how much we have transformed. And that's been helped by the £12 billion of private investment that shareholders have put in to transform Heathrow physically. It's been about the changing culture we have, focusing on the passenger and becoming a service organization, really focusing in on happy passengers traveling with their bags on time. And that's encouraged more passengers to choose to use Heathrow. We've grown passenger numbers by about 25% over the last 10 to 15 years. It's been quite remarkable. We're now today ranked in the top 10 airports in the world. And not many companies go from bottom 10 to top 10 within just a decade. It's not something we could have hoped to be able to do, but we've been able to achieve it. And we're grateful for the support from all of you in this room for helping us to achieve that. We have been named last year the Responsible Business of the Year. That says a lot about the kind of culture that we now have. And while making all this change, we have cut our costs per passengers by about 24% in real terms. So we've brought in real tight financial discipline. Now, that's been a great transformation in the last 10 years. Our aim is that the next 10 years are just as big a transformation in terms of the culture, in terms of the physical look and feel of the airport, as we help prepare Heathrow to take its part as the global gateway for a global Britain. And that is what we are working on. We'll talk a little bit more about the expansion side of that. But of course, we're also at the same time developing our business plan. We published the first version of that just before Christmas. That's a very exciting moment, and it showed just how much Heathrow expansion will benefit passengers, not just with better facilities and more destinations to suit them. It would also significantly reduce airfares for passengers by bringing in more competition and choice between airlines. So it's a fantastic opportunity, and we'll touch shortly on what we're doing around carbon. If I jump on to 2019, let's take a look at how we did. Well, it's been another record year, and I was being teased by on the radio this morning about not another record year, Mr. Holland-Kaye. Well, yes, it is another record year, both in terms of numbers of passengers choosing to use Heathrow and the level of service we've been able to give them. And those two are connected. The better the service we can offer, the more people will choose to travel Heathrow. We were named Best Airport in Western Europe for the fifth year running, and that's something we are hugely proud of. We're going to take you through the financials shortly. I should warn you that we have put these all into three IFRS 16 numbers to ease comparison. I know exactly what that means. But I just thought I would explain it to you. And if you'd like to know more details, then Javier will do that. Adjusted EBITDA was up 1.7% to £1.9 billion. And we'll take you through in a moment how we are doing that. We're very grateful for the support of the investor community in helping us to raise £2.1 billion in the global capital markets and adding the eighth currency to our platform with the inaugural Japanese yen bond last December. And that is a good indication of how we are starting to gear up our funding platform for the very significant changes that will come with expansion. And then in terms of our strategic priorities, we are at heart an operating business, so we'll continue to focus on better service, better resilience, lower cost, while preparing ourselves for a very significant expansion, which will double the size of the business in quite a short pace of time. While we are planning to expand, we are also planning to decarbonize not just our airport, but not just the UK aviation sector, but the global aviation sector. And it's important that as one of the leading global players in the sector, we really do take the lead. And finally, it is time to get on with expansion. That is what we are focused on. We have spent too long talking about this. Our Chinese shareholders are still surprised we haven't opened the new runway yet, for obvious reasons. But we live in a democracy, proudly, and these things take a little longer than in other parts of the world. So let me move on to slide 8 and talk about traffic performance. So we've seen a mixed pattern of growth. Typically, the long-haul markets are growing faster than short-haul markets. We've seen a lot of new routes opening up in Africa, so that has boosted that growth. Asia-Pacific, the decline there is largely due to the collapse of Jet Airways, and we haven't yet got a significant Indian carrier coming in to take that space. We have had good growth in China with new routes coming on there. So a lot of the changes that we see in a capacity-constrained airport are due to changes among the airlines. But it's a pretty good picture. What I've been talking about this morning is how things are starting to change. Heathrow will always be a fantastic, resilient business. I should reassure you of that. Always be in huge demand. But we are in a very competitive market. And when you look at the growth rates of some of the other European hubs, it will not be long before, with growth five times that of Heathrow, Charles de Gaulle starts to overtake us. And within a decade, Schiphol and Frankfurt will also have overtaken Heathrow as bigger European hubs. That just shows how critical it is for the UK economy that we get on and expand Heathrow. And although we normally talk about cargo tonnage in these statistics, actually by value, exports through Heathrow grew by 17% last year. That shows how the global economy is changing. More of the things we need to live our lives are traveling by air. And we now represent 40% of the UK's exports. That is a remarkable statistic and puts us well ahead of any other port in the UK and shows that any ambitions for growing the UK as an export economy have to be founded on an expansion of Heathrow. So the case for expanding Heathrow only gets stronger. From an operational performance point of view, on slide 9, we continue to provide better satisfaction, happy passengers traveling with their bags on time. And actually, on almost all these measures, this is the best performance that we have ever had in 70-something years existence of the company. And I'm particularly pleased with the passenger service scores. Having said that, there's a lot more that we want to do, so we will continue to focus on passenger improvement. On slide 10, this is a quick reminder of the timeline for expansion. We are making good progress with this. It is now 2 years since the parliamentary vote. We're close to submitting our development consent order application, and that would put us on track to get a planning consent in the first half of 2022, and then we would crack on and get the new runway open as quickly as possible. We've now, in the light of the challenges that some other big infrastructure projects have had in meeting specific dates, we put a range of dates in of 2022 to 2028. That's something the government prefer that we should do. But really, the quicker, the better, and we will need your support to make that happen. Now, moving on to sustainability, two or three years ago, we launched our Heathrow 2.0 sustainable growth plan. It's called 2.0 because 2.0 degrees was the target set by the Paris Accord. Of course, now the focus is on 1.5 degrees, so we will be updating this to the Heathrow 1.5, which might take a little bit of explaining. But the targets we have in there are completely aligned with the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, and we are making good progress on delivering against some of those. And that, of course, is important to the way in which we expand. Here on page 12, we have a series of commitments we have made around reducing aircraft noise, improving air quality, making it easy for people to get to the airport by public transport, and tackling carbon that are embedded with a national policy statement. And we have a detailed plan that sits behind this that will help us to get on with it. Now, carbon is the elephant in the airport. And if you've flown through Heathrow, you'll have seen the advertising that we are put out there to remind passengers of just how important we take the carbon issue and what we are doing about it, and encourage them to take actions that they can take to minimize their carbon footprint as they are flying. We have got a very clear focus on the kind of emissions that we have as an airport. We became carbon neutral last week. We have set out a goal for how we get to net zero carbon by 2050. And we have, here on page 13, we'll give a sense of what that involves. The first thing is changing airspace, so that planes are flying in the shortest possible routes. That surprisingly saves about 5 to 10% of carbon from flight. The second is around changing aircraft technology, more battery-powered planes for short haul and more efficient planes for long haul and short haul. But the big opportunity is around sustainable aviation fuels as an alternative to kerosene, either biofuels from second generation biosources or synthetic fuels, combining carbon and hydrogen, both well-established technologies that need scaling up. And the next 10 years will be about how quickly we can scale up those technologies. This is just a phone call reminding everyone to turn off their mobile phones. In terms of our business plan, we published a very comprehensive business plan back at the end of December, and it lays out a number of options for expanding Heathrow. We put together two what we call bookend options, one that is focused on what's the cheapest way you can deliver expansion and get the benefits as quickly as possible, the other which lays out some of the service opportunities. If we were to maximize service, if we were to take a little bit longer to get the airport open, what would that look like? If we really invested significantly in new public transport options, what would that look like? So that is the proposal we put out to the community, to the CAA, and to airlines just before Christmas. All of this is affordable. It's very good value from a consumer point of view. And in fact, if you look at the benefits for consumers, not just in terms of more destinations, but savings on ticket prices of between £20 and £40 for short haul and £80 and £140 for long haul. This is a massive opportunity for consumer savings by expanding Heathrow and taking away the monopoly power that currently exists on many routes out of Heathrow, which is captured by the airline. So it's a fantastic opportunity. Now, moving on to slide 15, which starts to touch on financeability. We've laid out three outcomes which would ensure that expansion is financeable and we maintain our commitments to the investor community. We've committed to maintaining investment grade credit ratings, both a Class A at A- and B at BBB flat. Our regulatory framework has to provide a fair return, taking into account the risk of the project, which will be higher, of course, than in a two-runway world. And we need a stable long-term regulatory framework. So we're looking to build on what we have at the moment. We have proposed a 15-year price control period, during which the cost of equity would be fixed. And that will make sure that shareholders will be remunerated fairly during the riskier phase of the project, which is the first half. And that gives certainty to allow both equity and debt financing. And then there are some unknowns within the price settlement around passenger traffic, commercial revenue, and operating costs. And we propose there should be periodic resets of those just to make sure that we're not overly advantaged or disadvantaged by things that happen externally. So it's a good proposal, and we're looking forward to getting the feedback from airlines and communities and submitting our final business plan to the CAA later this year. Finally, in terms of how we deliver expansion, we're making really good progress with our construction plans. We're scaling up the team who are involved in procurement. This is a fantastic opportunity to do things differently. And with modern design techniques, you can design everything in a 6 or 7D model and then send it off to get built somewhere else. So we increasingly think of Heathrow as being an assembly site where all the manufacturing work is taking place elsewhere. And we are planning to set up 4 or 5 logistics hubs across the country, which will help us to deliver expansion efficiently. And this will create skilled jobs, high-quality skilled jobs, right across the country, and actually fits in with the government's agenda for leveling up. So we're really pleased with the progress that we're making on that one, and that will help to deliver very good value very efficiently and reduce the pressure on the Southeast supply chain. So I will now pass you on to the fun bit, which is the financial review. And welcome Javier, our Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you, Dan. So welcome everyone to join us today, and not only people in the room, but also people in the conference call. So I will now share with you all the financial highlights for 2019, starting from page 18. So again, John touched on this important thing, I will remind you that all the financial numbers in the presentation are reported excluding the impact of IFRS 16. For those interested, we can have a coffee later on or even something stronger. But removing IFRS 16 effectively moves all the impact of our operating leases previously recorded above EBITDA to below EBITDA. If we were not making that adjustment, our growth in EBITDA would be artificially higher, and therefore to really show underlying performance, we have removed the impact of all of that. So on that basis, our financial performance was strong in 2019, as John mentioned, and obviously all on the back of a ninth record year of passenger traffic. Our revenue was up 3.4% year on year. And all of that was underpinned by aeronautical charges benefiting from favorable passenger mix, as well as the recovery of prior year's yield dilution. So regulation enabled us to wash up any yield dilution. We did have concentration in 2017, and therefore we are recognizing that now. Apart from that, it's the first year that we are going to introduce the impact of the commercial airline deal that we signed with our airline community last year, which in the period has delivered 55 pence per passenger rebate on the last 12 months. Moving into costs, costs have increased 6% to £1.2 billion compared to 2018, and I will explain in a minute the drivers behind that. And the combination of both revenue growth and costs means that adjusted EBITDA has grown by 1.7% in the year to £1.9 billion. If we look at net debt, we continue to have a healthy headroom to leverage trigger events and covenant levels on all the levels of the capital structure. And the debt at Heathrow Finance, as you can see, grew slightly faster than at Heathrow SP, and is part of our financing strategy getting into expansion. Regulatory asset base grew by 2.5% to £16.5 billion, and that reflects the combination of ongoing capital investment as well as inflation. So obviously you will know that our regulatory asset base is directly linked to changes in retail price indices. So let's now take a closer look at the details, starting with revenue on page 19. So revenue, I already flagged that grew 3.4%, overall driven by the almost 5% growth in aeronautical revenue. So there are three drivers behind aeronautical revenue. The first one is the solid passenger growth that John already explained. The second is the 3.9% increase in charges per passenger, driven by the favorable passenger mix and the recovery of the revenue dilution which occurred in 2017. So obviously, if you were removing that impact of the wash-up of the yield dilution, our prices continues going down year on year. So we decreased by another 1.5% in real prices, which represents a significant improvement in value for consumers. So also on top of that, in terms of revenue, which is the third component of revenues, we expect the first phase of the airline commercial deal. Obviously, we have started in 2019, but in 2020 and 2021, that rebate will represent an even bigger rebate for consumers, which was disclosed in our investor report. Obviously, given our single-till regulatory framework, we continue focusing on commercial delivery because that subsidizes passenger journeys, and we had another good year. So the key drivers for our retail growth included more passengers choosing to participate in our retail offering, and all of them spending more. The second thing is that we also improved the catering offering across the airport. And the third thing is obviously a strong performance in retail concessions on the back of a weaker pound during the year, which continues representing a good opportunity in terms of value for foreign consumers. In terms of other retail, we saw a £15 million decline, driven primarily by Bureau de Chance, one of our contracts. And that decline of results was primarily driven by the favorable contractual one-off that we saw in 2018, as well as a slower performance in 2019. So if we were removing the positive one-off in 2019 and we were looking at the underlying performance, retail revenue per passenger grew in the period by 1%. Other revenue increased by 1.6% as we collected annualized benefits also from track access charges for first time after the transition from some of our businesses to GWR. So moving on to slide 20 and talking about costs, obviously our focus remains very tightly on having strong disciplines while making sure that we don't cut corners and continue prioritizing and protecting our service and investing in resilience and growth. So overall, operating costs increased by 6% to £1.2 billion. And some of the key investments that we did in the year included, obviously, more costs related with expansion as we gear up for growth, and that are related primarily with people, consultancy, and marketing. So as you could expect, the majority of the expansion costs flows through our capital investment, but some are related with people, consultants, and marketing flows and, through the income statement. We also invested more in frontline security as well as special assistance, one of our top priority and commitment to consumers, as well as upgrading our drone defense capability and continue making changes on our IT systems, where now we have moved towards an integrated delivery model comprising four key service providers. Obviously, while we retain our focus on efficiency, we anticipate and we flagged in our investor report back in December that operating costs in 2020 will continue increasing as we move forward in our expansion plans. Turning on to slide 21 and talking about capital investment, in 2019 we invested a total of £856 million, the majority of which was focused on asset replacement programs, some pictures in the presentation, but also investments to improve passenger experience and airport resilience. In the period, we also invested £236 million related with expansion, which at this stage is primarily driven by planning costs and early design works. So as of 31st of December 2019, the balance of assets in the course of construction related with expansion and held in our balance sheet was £450 million, and we expect that the investment in expansion will continue growing in 2020. So by the end of next year, we will have around £1 billion of worth of investment related with expansion. I think it's worthwhile reminding that obviously one of the advantages of our regulation is that regulation enable us that as soon as we invest in our capital plan, providing that we engage constructively with airlines and we demonstrate capital efficiencies, that investment goes automatically into the RAB and we start generating returns straight away, which is obviously one of the critical features to ensure that we protect cash flow through these coming years of extreme growth. And talking about cash flows on page 22, we had another year of strong operating performance, and we generated more than £1.9 billion of cash from operations. And as you can see, the size of the green bar continues being larger than, and it was sufficient to cover all our cash capital investment, external net interest costs, as well as the dividends paid to ultimate shareholders. Obviously, it's worth noting that as expansion gathers pace, our increased capital investment levels will exceed cash flow from operating performance, as we already disclosed in our December 2019 investor report, and that will happen, will start to happen by the end of this year. In the period, we remunerated shareholders paying dividends of £500 million to ultimate shareholders, which again is something that we are very proud and reflects the strong performance of the business. So when you add all the cash outflows in this slide, the net debt increased by only 7 million during the year to £12.4 billion. Turning to slide 23, and obviously reflecting the strength of our balance sheet, our balance sheet continues remaining very, very robust, and we have very comfortable covenant levels across all the three classes of our capital structure. So Class A, starting with our senior debt, has now moved to 5.5 percentage points of headroom level, above our historical range of 2 to 3 percentage points, as we started to reallocate some of our senior debt into Hydro Finance. We said in our December 2019 investor report that we expect that our Class A gearing ratio will continue to fall over the next months to just below 61% by the end of 2020. The same will happen with Class B. And as we previously indicated, these plans are simply a consequence of delivering on our commitment to you to ensure that we maintain our current investment grade credit ratings. And that means that in the near future, while we continue focusing on gearing metrics, we will complement that with providing even more focus on cash flow driven metrics. All of that means that Hydro Finance gearing is expected to reduce, further providing an 8% headroom compared to our historical 5% headroom level. Moving on, slide 24, and here we are in Sally's territory. Obviously, our debt financing strategy remains unchanged, so we continue focusing on the three pillars illustrated in the slide: stronger liquidity, better diversification, and longer duration. And obviously, I am proud on behalf of Sally to report that we deliver on all fronts in 2019. So overall, with your support, we raised £2.1 billion in new debt globally, including now our inaugural Japanese yen transaction in December. So for all our new Japanese investors joining the Hydro family, yokoso, and hopefully we will do even more trades in the future. With that, our liquidity horizon now extends to October 2021, and over 90% of our debt raised in 2019 matures well after the third runway opens. Over the next 2 years, we will transition to increase our funding needs, as you will know, and we anticipate that over the next 2 years, we will reach around £3 billion of funding needs per annum starting from 2022. This will include that we have a robust position on multiple issuances, and as always, that will help us to make sure that we are protected in terms of volatility on financial markets, as well as ensuring that we continue having a careful look to relative value opportunities. But as always, this is your slide, apart from Sally's slide, and I would like to thank you, all of you in the room and in the phone, for the extraordinary commitment that you keep having behind Hydro. Wrapping up, let me just flag some of the key summaries of the financials, as well as providing outlook for 2020. So obviously, we are absolutely proud of the record traffic that we experienced in 2019, thanking all the colleagues in the airport for providing that great service ahead of expansion. We continue having a strong cash generative business and a strong financing foundations as we move forward to a heavy capital expenditure period. We continue in terms of delivering small but firm steps in our financing strategy to make sure that we transition the different components of our capital structure to get ready for growth. And in terms of financing plans, we have £1.7 billion of funding needs this year. As always, we will continue engaging with all of you. We will continue looking at relative value opportunities, but also we will have a very close eye to the U.S. market, which is strategically important for us. So that will be an area that we will be looking very carefully this year. Looking ahead, and in terms of outlook, we expect our full-year traffic and financial performance to remain broadly and materially in line with what we disclosed back in December 2019. And obviously, these days, we are very, very closely monitoring how the coronavirus situation evolves. We are obviously quite concerned about the news that that could have, especially for other citizens in the planet, that we are really measuring that on a weekly basis in terms of what the impact that could be. Obviously, we are talking about an unprecedented event, the closest precedent that we have to this was the SARS 2003 outbreak that generated around 2.8% decline in traffic. At this stage, and based on the information that we have now, we believe that our base case suggests that it will not materially impact our trade this year, but as always, we will continue having a transparent and constant dialogue with you. Next week, we will publish our traffic numbers for February, and at that point in time, we will see the first full month of traffic, and obviously, if the situation were changing, we will keep you posted through any communications, but definitely our quarterly results in April and our semi-annual investor report in the summer. So with that, I will close the section of a very successful year, and we'll now hand back to John to review our strategic developments. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Javier. I just realized, looking at one of those pictures, we had some Virgin self-aggrop desks with a sign saying T5 check-in, which, as you will know, Virgin did not operate out of T5, so I'd like to apologize to BA. That wasn't an intentional slide, but we do have self-backdrops in both Terminal 3 and Terminal 5, and as well as other terminals. So let me just move on finally to our strategic update. As you will have seen, the company is in really good health. We're performing very well and working well with all of our airline partners and others across the airport. There are a couple of, I won't recap on what we have done, but there's a lot of change that we are making happen across the airport. From a Mojo point of view, which is about making Heathrow a great place to work, we're very proud of being a London Living Wage employer, and we'll bring all of our supply chain into a living wage by the end of this year. And we've also made a leap forward in terms of the apprenticeships across the airport, going from around 350 apprenticeships a year a couple of years ago to around 1,000 a year now. And we're on track to the 10,000 that we have set out to do. And increasingly, we're helping people from more difficult, more challenging backgrounds to get into work. So care leavers, people who are homeless, people leaving the military, we're helping them to find good quality work across the airport. From a service point of view, we've made some really good step changes already. We'll continue that rollout of end-to-end biometrics, which means that increasingly you won't need to keep showing your passport to travel through the airport, then you'll just use your face as your identity. And the rollout of CT scanners, which allow you to keep your laptops and liquids in bags. We'll be one of the first airports to have those fully up and running, and we're making good headway on that. And that will be a transformation in passenger service. In terms of Beta Plan, we've got our final business plan coming up, so we'll really work hard to make sure that that is a good and robust plan and delivers fantastic value for airlines and for passengers. We have a big internal change program called Project Magenta, which is systematizing and simplifying a lot of the processes we work with. You'll know that these things are always more complicated than you'd hope they would be, but that will give us a strong platform on which we can then scale up and grow, and will help us to find scale efficiencies as we expand. And then finally, in terms of sustainable growth, we have our CCO submission coming up. That'll be a significant milestone. We are continuing to take a lead on decarbonizing aviation, and we are investing with natural climate solutions, which is peatland restoration and some farming solutions, which will help to absorb carbon. And we're also working with Cambridge University or they test to see how quickly we can scale up sustainable aviation fuels and how quickly we can get that to scale. So a lot of good things happening across the board. And as a team, we're working very well together to make sure that we help to deliver those. So it's exciting times at Heathrow. I really want to thank all of you for the support that you have shown, because before we get the first bit of tarmac laid, we will need a very significant support from you to make sure that we can fund the future expansion. And you have been just fantastic in the last 12 months in doing that. So with that, I will close the formal presentations. And we will open up for questions. And Mark, I think if you'd like to...
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now to enter the queue. Once your name's been announced, you can ask your question. If you find your question's answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. So once again, that's 01 to ask a question, or 02 if you need to cancel. And whilst we're registering questions, I'll hand back for any questions in the room.
Fantastic. I think we've got some microphones at the back. If anyone has any questions in the room? Yeah, fantastic. Thank you.
You obviously have a nicely developing ESG story to tell. Are there practical examples of how expansion itself will provide opportunity to accelerate the progress that you've already made?
That's a really good question. And because, of course, people will look at the contradiction. How can you be championing carbon and yet looking to expand? Well, the simple answer is we need to decarbonize aviation. Aviation is a fantastic thing. For all the reasons you will understand, you couldn't live your lives without it, and nor should the next generation be deprived of aviation and the benefits it brings. So we need to rapidly decarbonize flight. And actually, the great thing about sustainable aviation fuel is you can blend it with kerosene. So the sooner you scale up, the sooner you get on with it. But to your question, there are a lot of things we can do while we are building which will help to accelerate decarbonization. And a lot of that will be about the embedded carbon in how you build things. So we're looking at low or zero carbon cement and low and zero carbon steel, which are two of the biggest raw materials that we will be using. And these do exist. Hydrogen-based steel is being produced in test up in Scandinavia. So there's an opportunity to scale that up. And we'd really like to have a UK-based solution for that. And this will revolutionize the way in which we build things. And it's quite interesting talking to our supply chain, where we say, well, how could you have lower carbon concrete? And their answer was, well, we could just use less of it, which sounds like a pretty obvious answer. But if you're not looking to minimize the carbon, you don't necessarily think of it in those terms. And actually, when we look around what we're doing, we can be much more efficient with some of those things. So I think both in terms of the way in which we deliver expansion and the way in which we can work with our supply chain to decarbonize, we can make a big difference. And we've made it clear to all of our supply chain that if they are not going to join us on the journey to decarbonize, then they won't be part of our supply chain. And I've been really pleased with the response we've had and how many organizations have come to us and said, here's our net zero plan, and we're getting on with it, which is just fantastic. So thank you for your question. Any other questions in the room? Fab, do you have any questions on the line?
We do. We have the one question on the phones. So that's from the line of Jenny Ping at Citi. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. I just have one. Going back to your slide 15, which talks about the 15-year price control which you've proposed and the split of fixed cost of equity with a effectively floating cost of debt. You've obviously given us the 6.1% allowed rate of return overall, and we all know what the debt to equity structure looks like. Can you talk a little bit more details in terms of what the makeup of that 6.1% is, i.e. the split between the cost of equity and the cost of debt, and also how exactly the floating element would work as we go forward? Thank you.
Great. Great. Well, I'd love to explain our capital assets pricing model, but Javier, I will let you.
Good afternoon. Obviously, in terms of details, in terms of we saw the blended in the main document, but accompanying the main document, we have submitted a detailed forecast that disaggregates that in terms of equity structure and debt structure. I think, in general, the first of all is obviously we have a capital structure that is very well proven and known by investors. So our intention is to capitalize on the great capital structure that we have today. We shouldn't forget that in the last 15 years, our regulatory asset base has already trebled, and we have raised more than £12 million on the existing capital structure. Therefore, this capital structure works, is effective, and is scalable. But obviously, we are working in terms of, is there any particular improvement we can do on that? We have started conversations with rating agencies. And a long story short is that obviously we do anticipate some reduction in gearing in the years to come, reflecting that some of the risk profile of the program will change. Obviously, we will have more passenger risk, and potentially we will have also more construction risk. Therefore, to deliver on our commitment of maintaining existing A- investment grade rating, we will have to de-gear. By how much, I cannot tell you at this stage because I don't know. We have started discussion with rating agencies, but we will reduce as much as needed to maintain our current investment grade credit ratings. In terms of, John talked earlier about the 15-year price control, that's primarily designed to maintain and provide visibility and stability on our cost of equity over the next 15 years. And on the debt side, there are two things. One is, obviously, we are very keen to maintain the performance-based rebaseline metrics, and the reason for that is to ensure that credit investors don't take more risk than they take today, so you are not exposed to long-term. So in that regard, no changes. And one of the things that we have introduced is obviously the CAA in their consultations have talked about cost of debt indexation. So rather than getting a full absolute allowance at the start of the period, that will be indexed as we move. So benefits or additional costs will be transferred directly to passengers, which, according to the CAA, could be more cost effectively. So we welcome that, and we have incorporated that in our business plan.
Have you actually given out any numbers for either, especially on the cost of equity assumptions?
Yes, I think that they are disclosed in our detailed appendix accompanying the summary points.
And that's published?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you, Jenny. Any other questions on the line?
Yep, we've had one further question come through. That's from the line of James Sparrow at BNP Paribas. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, James.
Yeah, hi everyone. I was actually a little bit late to the start of the call, so apologies if you did make a comment on this, but I just wanted to sort of touch on the coronavirus issue. Obviously, I guess two things, and I appreciate there's probably limited things you can say, but just wondering if you can talk a bit about any impact on traffic so far in February. Obviously, January was a very strong month. And then, you know, just more broadly, if sort of traffic does decline significantly, what sort of levers you might have available to sort of alleviate the impact on your kind of on your cash flow effectively. Thanks.
Okay, James, let me take this one. So obviously, from an operational perspective, we are working very, very closely with Public Health England. At the end of the day, they are the authority from a health and safety perspective that they will set what type of standards we need. So for the time being, I think that we continue working with them. There hasn't been any major changes in the operations. And the only thing that we have incorporated is obviously sensible things that you would expect from a responsible business. So introducing more hand sanitizers, increasing the level of cleaning and frequency of deep cleaning in some of the areas that are closer to passenger-facing areas. And that could come with some level of additional costs, which at this stage they are not material. From a traffic perspective, obviously we are weekly updating our passenger forecast based on forward-looking bookings. I think at this stage our base case suggests that it's not going to be material. So and non-material means in the region of £50 to £60 million. But obviously that could change rapidly. So the last release in terms of traffic numbers based on January was a very limited impact because obviously the outbreak of COVID-19 started on the 24th of January, so we only saw 1 week of impact. But next week we will release our February numbers and we will take stock from there. So I think at this stage, obviously we are monitoring carefully and obviously we are well aware of all the news, working closely with Public Health England, but at this stage the numbers are not material impact to our trade and we'll keep you posted in the next quarterly report, which will take place in mid-April.
Okay, thanks very much. Maybe just follow up, and I probably shouldn't know the answer to this, but if it does get really bad, is there a kind of a threshold at which you can start going back to the CAA for some sort of kind of compensatory kind of measures?
I think there are two things. Obviously, what the CAA already provided a passenger shock in our regulatory settlement. So if this were becoming major, you could argue that this would be one of the passenger shocks already allowed by the regulator, and therefore the short answer would be no. The other thing that you will have to take into consideration in 2020 is that we will have our airline commercial deal, and that airline commercial deal has some thresholds that if we were dropping before those levels, we will reduce our fixed rebate to airlines. That threshold level to starting to reduce fixed rebates is around 79 million passengers. So if we were dropping below 79 million, we will start reducing our fixed rebate in the short term.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Anything else on the line?
No questions so far on the lines.
Fantastic. I didn't think we'd get away without the coronavirus question. It was the only thing the media wanted to ask about today. Anything else in the room? In which case, let's close it there. Thank you for being here today. One thing I forgot to mention, actually, hugely important, is that we are running the Midnight Marathon again this year. We'd love to have as many people involved as possible. Javier, who took part this year, was hugely embarrassed that he didn't raise the most money in sponsorship. So if you're not able to take part, then please make sure that Javier is a winner, if not in speed, then in quantity of money raised.
Not in speed,
but thank you for your support. Lovely to see you, and we'll see you again in 6 months' time. Thank you.